Ladies and gentlemen, Canada's under attack. Right-wing extremists are trying to take this country over, and they're trying to do it by making people belly laugh. I'll let my gal here, Rachel Gilmore, explain it. She can do a better job.
With far-right extremism. And if you don't believe me, a very unfunny comedy troupe that went semi-viral recently. Did you know Canada actually has a serious problem with far-right extremism? And if you don't believe me, a very unfunny comedy troupe that went semi-viral recently highlights this problem. See, a bunch of their shows got canceled after comedy clubs found out they were selling this disgusting t-shirt featuring a joke about Robert Picton, a serial unaliver who hunted vulnerable, often Indigenous women. Relatives of the victims saw this t-shirt. The group called the Danger Cats have also made residential school jokes. Anyways, the issue ended up in the national news, so lots of people were talking about it. But one thing people didn't seem to know was that this group actually has ties to a far-right extremist group that I've covered a lot, Diagolon. I've seen members of this comedy troupe pop up on Diagolon-adjacent podcasts, including in a big fundraiser the group did for their leader, Jeremy McKenzie. These guys also share each other's gnarly posts on messaging boards, and sometimes even hang out in real life. Wow. They seem so cool. And if you think the t-shirt was bad, trust me, it's very in keeping with the kind of stuff these guys and their friends post all the time. In fact, researcher Dan Cullen just published a deep dive on the group and exposed the fact that the comedy troupe has been hanging out with Diagolon in some capacity since about 2022. Like, here's one member of Danger Cats hanging out with this guy. And here's another member of Danger Cats with Chris Lysak, who is one of the men accused of conspiring to unalive RCMP officers during the convoy blockade in Alberta, which the Danger Cat boys also hung out at. And when these guys were arrested, law enforcement also found a weapons cache containing this vest. Remind you of anything? So while these guys might seem like total losers can still be dangerous. If we don't take these guys seriously, we could accidentally normalize their messages. Dan Cullen, who reported on the group, told me this, quote, Danger Cats are one of many brands of far-right content which uses shock value comedy to promote serious beliefs, which would not be easy to promote in serious messaging. Basically, they make it all look like a joke, but the message can stick. And for some of the guys they hang out with, it's not a joke at all. What do you think? Did you know?
Yeah. And what Rachel Gilmore doesn't have the full story, though, because your boy here is breaking some news. And I will tell you, I will confirm that they've actually been hanging out with people even further right than Diagolon, as evidenced by this clip I found of one of the Danger Cats engaging in a roast and normalizing this far-right extremist brand of politics. Look at this.
No, this guy, if you don't know, has 0.24% of the popular vote. When it comes to Canada's vote, he is 0.24%, which is what the average libertarian blows at a check stop. So it's kind of fitting.
First of all, I don't know whether I've been roasted by Aladdin or Justin Trudeau in blackface.
Oh! Did you get jokes?
What are you, anyways? There's a lot of multicultural diversity wrapped up in there. You look like a guy who conservatives want to build a wall to keep out and liberals want to give all our tax money to.
Well, there you go.
That's what I'm talking about.
And joining me today is that guy right here, the far-right extreme comedian.
Don't even joke about this. You can't even know.
Oh, boy. Shit. I'm breaking...
Dude, I stopped listening to that girl the minute she said serial unaliver.
Okay? Yeah. What, that was crazy. And did you see that clip before of Rachel Gilmore?
Yeah, and it's a pain in my ass because did you see me in any of those photos?
No. Well, I saw you at the podcast table there, but
not with them.
No.
I did a podcast with Danger Cats.
Right.
There's a reason I don't do photos with that group. And don't I'm a comedian. They're not. When you are a politician, the things you say are statements. When you're a comedian, you're just having fun. You're trying to be a humorist. Sorry, an undepressor or whatever.
An undepressor. Fair enough. Yeah.
Honestly, if we want to talk about mistakes made, the jokes were not mistakes. Mistakes are there. Even associating with people that don't have the same goal as you. We're just here to make people laugh. You could stand up for Diagolon. You could stand up for all those guys and say, oh, there was no weapons found in this. And they're actually not far right extremists. But if you Wikipedia them, the general public doesn't know any of that. They just think that these guys are assholes. So it doesn't do me any service hanging out with them. That's why you don't see me in those photos.
Right, right.
Hack and Sam, they're a little bit more political than I am. And they know that, like, the truth, that those guys are just joking around, but the general public doesn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And let's back up a little bit here. I mean, all that stuff at the beginning, that was all done in, you know, obviously satire. You know, I ran into Brett here years ago before we did that roast. My wife and I, we rarely ever go to a comedy club. I finally hauled her out to the comedy club and we saw this young comedian up there. We thought he was hilarious. And it was Brett Forte. He was, I can't remember who you're opening for. I think you might've been the host or something that night, but we thought you were hilarious. And then I ran it. I came across you a few years later. You were hired to roast Maxime Bernier at a play.
I was not hired to roast Maxime Bernier.
Oh, you weren't? Okay.
Roasted him.
You roasted him. That's right.
I was hired to, I'm in Kingston, Ontario, working the comedy club out there. And they had a rally because it was election year or whatever on a Sunday afternoon at a bingo hall. His supporters were going to come out at 2 p.m. and they needed an MC. So they just called the local comedy club and they said, who's working? Can we borrow him on Sunday? And they said, yeah, sure. We got this guy. And then I took the opportunity to take some shots at not just him, but every politician. And yeah. You got to imagine like 65 and up crowd in a bingo hall.
Right, at 2 right, right.
I'm doing jokes like you just played, like when we were playing back and forth.
Yeah.
And I remember the reaction, man. It was like some old lady came up to me after. And she goes, I like what you did on Netflix with Justin Trudeau, but I didn't like what you did today. She thought I was Hasan Minhaj.
That
special that came out where he interviewed Justin Trudeau, that was around that time. So she thought I was an Indian comedian. And then another guy, a priest, comes at me. He goes, you didn't have to swear. You didn't have to call Andrew Scheer's wife a cow. That pushed it too far. Yeah.
Everyone's got their take on how, what you should say and how you should say it. Right. I mean, if we listened to everyone who had an issue with that, what you had to say, would there be anything funny left to be said?
Yeah. It'd be no fun if we didn't have an enemy, right?
Well, isn't comedy kind of taking something that's tragic and looking at it in a different way or spinning it or trying to deal with something like that? Or, you know, I don't know. I come from a different, you know, in my line of work, one of the things that, as a firefighter paramedic that protects mental health is being able to laugh at tragedy. I mean, if we couldn't do that, we would break down. Like, I remember one of my first calls as an EMT was, a guy I actually knew who had burnt alive in a cabin. And I was the probie. I was a junior guy. And my job was to go in there and bag them up. Like my mentors, these two olds, it was like Stadler and Waldorf or whatever, get in there, kid, go bag that body up. And I went in there and this guy has nothing. Like, he's just a burnt shell of, the only skin on him was his ass. He was burnt from his mid femurs down. I had to get a pry bar to like pry him off the ground to roll him. Piece of his intestine flops over and I start like dry heaving because of the smell. His brains in a soupy mess come out the back of his head and I get him in this bag and bag him up and I have to sit in the back of the ambulance. This is back when we did body removal with this body in a bag and I'm just fucking pale faced, not knowing how to deal with this and going like, how do I process this? One of these old guys looks back at me and goes, hey kid, first crispy critter. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so inappropriate, but so funny at the same time. And like, and then he doubled down on it because he saw my reaction and he's like, hey Ron, you hungry? You feel like barbecue ribs for lunch? And like, oh, this is so fucking inappropriate, but also so much what I needed in that moment to like break the tension. And then he pulled me aside afterwards and he said to me, he said, look, this is dark humor. The world would never understand it, right? This obviously stays behind closed doors And this is how we build up like clinical detachment. And like, otherwise we'd take this tragedy home with us every day and let it eat away at us. And we'd have very short careers with very poor mental health. I said, so if you can't learn how to, and look, you did what you needed to do. You dry heave, but you got yourself together. You got the job done and you should feel really good about that. And, you know, we have to be able to laugh at our job and laugh at tragedy. And that lesson has stuck with me for, you know, my entire career and has helped maintain my mental health. Meanwhile, a lot of my colleagues, you know, the culture is shifting where you can't laugh at tragedy anymore. Like you can't, that we've taken a tool out of our mental health belt of being able to clinically detach from tragedy. And now we have to take it all on and be like, victims along with the actual victims, you know what I mean? And it's no wonder that our rates of mental health and suicide are only getting worse.
Sorry, what did you just say? Unaliving, please. Broadcast, can you please?
So part of what I want to have you on was just to kind of explore that aspect of comedy too. Obviously, you guys are going, you know, their dark humor is a thing. And
well, I have a group of people in Winnipeg that want to burn me to a crisp right now and turn me into a crispy corpse. Okay.
Right.
Crispy critter. Sorry. Right. Because jokes. So,
and the people that will have to pick up your carcass, they won't even be able to laugh about it, you know?
No. Now I was going to ask you, so if you made a joke like that with your supervisor in the car with you or somehow it got back, like, do you get reprimanded now for speaking that way?
We've become more corporatized over time, right? So HR departments with ladies that are, we would certainly be at high risk of getting in trouble for sure. I mean, if I were to talk to, now I'm mentoring the young guys and they're experiencing horrific things out there. And I have to be careful about how I talk to them, right? Yeah. If I were to just, like, I have to trust that they're not going to go to HR looking for a safe place or something. We hold back from giving the young guys these tools to, like, dark humor is a huge tool for us to deal with this stuff. That's kind of off the table now, unless you really trust the guy and know he's not going to go to HR.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting... you would think comedians would have maybe a different set of rules, but seemingly not. Seemingly the HR department is kind of
right
in my office now as well, which it shouldn't be, but
right. Okay. So let's bring us up to present. So you did this roast with, or you did this MC event with Bernier. I saw it. I reached out to you and said, hey, it'd be fun to do a roast or do something. I'll put myself up there as a target. And you were kind enough to.
Oh, and the target hit back. You were awesome.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things ever, man. That was great.
Yeah, it was a blast. And then since then, I've seen you blow up. I mean, you've hooked up with Brendan Schaub. I saw you on his podcast. You're down at Joe Rogan's mothership. You're touring, you joined up with the Danger Cats, and you guys seem to be making waves and doing good things. Tell me a little bit about your kind of comedy career and how it's progressed over the last few years.
Different volumes, different, like, I don't know. Danger Cats was kind of survival. It was in a time where there was no shows and it was hard to get 70 people even to come out. So I teamed up with some people to get the job done and we were having shows at a time.
Is that because of COVID or just?
Yeah, there was no live entertainment really across the country. And we were like doing the only show, some of them illegal, some of them legal. Like you'd have to rent out a hotel room and sit on your balcony. And we did a show in an atrium. And so we're in the bottom and the crowd is all occupying different balconies and you had to rent out a full room for the night. Like it was like a $300 ticket. It was insane, but we were playing by the rules, trying to get it done any way possible. It was pure survival. And then we got out of it, as did the rest of the world. And it's going quite well. We're moving good tickets in Canada, at least. And now I have my visa to work in the States and we're kind of starting from square one down there and trying to amass a following where it matters.
Right, right. Now, Danger Cats has, it hasn't always really been a comedy brand, right? I mean, I remember my brother and some of his friends, they were kind of into extreme dirt biking and like just doing crazy wild stunts, kind of Jackass stuff.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be what they were following Danger Cats for a while. Is that what they were before, or they kind of morphed into?
Well, it was always comedy. Like it was always
right.
videos of people.
Yeah. Well, Jackass is comedy. I guess it's kind of physical stunt comedy, but.
So Uncle Hack is the creator of that brand and got a nice following. And in this business, you need to be a good comedian with an act, but you also have to have the clicks on the internet. Right. Something I was kind of lacking, something Sam Walker was kind of lacking. But having teamed up with Hack, we kind of cover all bases. And that's why it made sense. You know, I headlined the tour as the more senior comedian, but Hack pulls the cart with his YouTube and Instagram presence.
Right.
And Sam keeps us on time and keeps us, waking up at the right time. Right, he's our driver. He's our itinerary guy.
Yeah.
And also security. When we need to boot someone out, he pulls out a flashlight, 1,000 lumens, lights them up in the crowd like a Christmas tree. And usually I'm there to record it. And we got ourselves a good clip the next day.
Yeah, I've seen a few of those videos. And guys, I'm going to put a bunch of links down below so you can follow Brett, follow Danger Cats and these guys and keep up with their antics. It's a fun follow on social media because you're always putting little movies and little clips together about shit that's happening just in the crowds and the drama you're experiencing and different things like that. Doing a lot of hidden camera stuff. Too, like that whole Bernier MC thing was all kind of hidden camera, so you got to see conservatives.
They were driving me to the gig. I got like a Lincoln Town Car escort to the gig from his party, his People's Party of Canada, right?
Yeah.
And I'm asking questions, and they're like, "Yeah, there's going to be some spies in the crowd tonight." I went, "Spies?" They're like, "Yeah, from other parties, the conservatives, the liberals, they're going to be there." And little did they know, like, I was the spy in the back the whole time. And then I get the footage. They actually give me a copy of the footage where I, you know, and I got the job done too. Like, Maxime shook my hand after, and he is, as People's Party of Canada, he is Mr. Free Speech himself. So he would be a hypocrite to be mad at me. He's like, "Well, you know what? I hired you, and I did get the job done. I still did my MC duties and brought up all the speakers," and he enjoyed it. So I got the paycheck, and then they gave me a copy of the footage. And as soon as I started releasing it, they reached out. They were calling me nonstop and emailing. They're like, "You do not have rights to this footage." And I literally had it in a hard drive in a satchel, and I was taking a train from Kingston to Toronto. I felt like a real spy, like escaping the city with this footage. I love this shit, man. Like, it's like I watched Ocean's 11 at like age 8. And when you're like 8 to 10 years old, it's a very key part of your development, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Leaves an impression.
When I watched that movie, I was like, "I'm this now. That's me.
That's you, and
now I have to do it almost for a living with the shows because of all the threats the venues are getting right now.
Right.
We have to switch the venues and announce the location to ticket buyers only the day of the show. And then we know which ticket buyers are not honest. They're the ones that want to come disrupt it. And it's an easy Google. We just search their name. We see the Palestine flag, the Ukraine flag, different pronouns. We go, "Okay, put that one on the list." And we send them a different location across town, 45 minutes away. We say, "Here's the show." And by the time they figure out the show is not there, we're already wrapping up mic cords and we're on to the next city. So it's
that's incredible. So you guys have figured out how to figured out counter tactics to these disruptors. That's awesome. So what happened anyway? So you guys,
what happened, man?
Yeah, what, tell me. Like, I saw the shirt, and then I saw a bunch of, thought it was funny, and then I saw a bunch of controversy, and you guys, I saw venues canceling on you.
Oh, you thought it was funny?
What's that?
Oh, you thought it was funny.
I thought the shirt was funny. I'm like, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you that the immediate thing I thought of when I saw the shirt is, I mean, this guy deserves to be made fun of. Like, yeah, of course, make fun of Robert Picton. He's a fucking serial killer. Like, you know.
Yeah, but saying it, we're making fun of the victims. Okay, who cares who I'm making fun of? It's
right.
So there's a shirt right now in the States that is like quite popular. I just came from Austin and I seen white girls all over Sixth Street wearing this one. Choke me like Bundy, eat me like Dahmer. And that's $6.99 on Etsy.com. Right. And that one's perfectly fine. We do a Robert Picton shirt.
Yeah.
And there is a $15,000 hit on my head. So, yeah,
by the way, here's the shirt for my audience.
So can I just explain like what the goal here is? So as a comedian, you have to figure out at one point, like what merch am I going to sell?
Right.
And for Sam, you know, he's like, man, you usually try to take a joke out of your act and make a visual representation for it. I did it with some East Indiana Jones fridge magnets and stuff like that. And I have a clothing company, 26 Dover. I sell some of these things. But for him, he had this funny joke about Picton. And he's like, okay, I got an artist to draw me cheers and a piece of bacon with this guy, over 50 flavors of hookery smoked bacon, Picton Farms. Like, it kind of was clever enough to kind of check the box. And he's like, okay, I'll give this a try. Now, it didn't sell well at all.
Right.
And the one that sells like hotcakes for him is Don't Do Drugs Without Me. You know, just a simple
thing.
And that's what you learn in like the merch game or whatever. Simple is what sells. The intricate stuff doesn't. Point is, it didn't sell for a year. It had been on the website. No problem.
Oh, you had it up for that long?
For a year. No
problem. Before anyone even noticed that, that they should have been outraged about something.
Right. And this is a common theme with jokes that land in hot water is they're only offensive when the topic is being covered in the news. So when I got a bunch of threats in 2020 for a turban joke, I had been doing that joke for years and it was funny. But then all of a sudden it was Sikh Awareness Month on the anniversary of the 85 genocide. And a group of people were looking to get their clicks as well. So they used me as a target. And then here we go, Robert Picton. He is up for parole all of a sudden. He's been in prison for 25 years. We could have had the shirt for sale for 24 years and it wouldn't have been a problem. But the minute he's up for parole, it makes the headlines.
Right.
And then they look for their story that they can run. And Sam actually has a really good point about this. Every news station in Canada seemingly covered this on their 6 o'clock news and showed the image and even said over 50 flavors of hookery smoked bacon. So that means it passed censors to air on primetime television.
Yes.
So it wasn't that horrendous after all, was it?
Right. Well, yeah. And the news is promoting your merch, right? I mean, they're saying the very thing you're saying that people ought to be outraged about, but we shouldn't be outraged when the news has that image, but we should be outraged when you guys have that image. Cause you're the untouchables, the undesirables. You're not part of the establishment media.
So it caused a lot of pain and that's never my goal. Yeah. I don't want to actually cause pain, but
sure.
So you know, people are lashing out against the shirt, and the one woman, she goes on every station, she goes, my cousin's not a flavor, and she
I saw that
really squeezes out the tears for
there's
everybody.
There's gotta be a joke there too. I just like my mind goes to places when I hear that, and I'm like, fuck, don't go there.
I know, same.
You know what I mean? What does that say about me?
It does suck. I get it, but like you really did the whole tour. Like you everything short of the view, you fucking hit.
Right.
Whatever. So we pulled the shirt from the site. Like I said, it wasn't really selling anyways. It's not a loss. You know what I mean? Like if this is going to agitate you that much, let's just take the splinter out of your heel and move on. But so I make an announcement about the venues and how we're getting threats. And I go, and by the way, the shirt has been removed from the website and all proceeds will be donated to Ukraine.
Yeah, I saw. Oh, that was
cheek. People do not understand tongue in cheek. Again, every news station, word for word, and they say the proceeds will be going to Ukraine, and people are like, why isn't the money going to this, why ain't the money going to that, why ain't and they didn't get the joke. So everyone that was like on our side before going, hey, how dare you get mad at them, this was a good shirt, like free speech, and those free speech people, the minute you say you're donated to Ukraine, they go, well, wait a second, fuck these guys, never mind. So we pissed off everyone, and that's kind of the goal.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's kind of how that was what gave me, I mean, the meme that put me on the map was a meme that pissed off liberals and conservatives equally, right? I want gay married couples be able to protect their marijuana plants with guns.
Yes.
And that
people slogan, didn't know which way to, they were, you know, how,
yeah, who is this guy? What, I can't put him in a box. I don't know what to do with this. My mind is exploding here.
Yeah. Game of death. Bruce Lee. Look, yeah, at there's, that spell.
There's two boxes, right? And by signaling that you're giving your thing to Ukraine, you just, signaled you were in the, not in the box everyone that defended you thought you were in, right? So
that's what got really funny. Yeah. Oh, and even funnier is, so the spite tour is what we're called. Like, our tour is called the spite tour because we're fueled by people that want to see us fail, essentially. Right. We've had a few run-ins with this shit. I've lost commercial work because I made fun of a guy in a wheelchair during a roast battle, and he consented, and he even said, like, that's what it's for. I wanted to be made fun of, but... So they
We can't treat these people like normal humans. We have to treat them like they're little children, right? That's the logic there.
So the Alberta Forest Association, which I did the commercial for, they fire me. And then they have to reshoot the commercial, which means everyone gets a double paycheck, which is great. Right. So they get added to the spite list. Okay, Alberta Forest, they're in. The Sikhs that gave me 1,000 death threats, we add them to the list. The gym that banned me down the street here for wearing a mask the whole time I was working out during COVID, they get put on the site. And underneath my tour dates, I just go spite tour fueled by, and I just put the graphics of the Alberta Forest Association Repsol Center, right? Just as a little homage, a little joke.
Yeah.
And the people that are coming after us, they like post, they're like, hey guys, I found out who the sponsors are for their tour. Here are their emails. Everyone blast them. And it's info@worldseekorganization.com, info@albertaforestproducts.com, frontdesk@repsolcenter.ca.
And that's like, hilarious.
Really good. All these people are going to get these emails about Brett Forte again. Fuck this guy.
There's some genius level shit going on there. I mean, it seems like the people that are flourishing these days are people that are able to take that hate and use it to their advantage. You know, that the hate you get online drives more clicks and views towards you, but it's got to be tough though. I mean, like you said,
and
I've been on that side of it as well. You know, I there's been some controversies and like bad shit happening that has been linked to messages that I've put out that, you know, I posted, there was a cop killer that had one of my memes on his Facebook page. And, you know, the media is trying to spin it like I inspired a fucking cop killing. And I get it, man. That was like the darkest time in my life. Like, how the fuck do I come out of, how do you deal with that? Right. And luckily I had local media, like reporters liked me, that I had a good relationship with them, and they didn't run with the spin that corporate media wanted to put on it, which is like hoist this guy on his petard and like fucking lynch him in front of the mob for clicks kind of thing. But what advice would you have for someone who is facing this kind of thing? Cause it's not just comedians and kind of controversial public figures anymore. Now it's like normal people going to jobs that might say something or do something or get caught up in a mob cancellation thing.
Yeah. By friend.
Have you learned any mental resiliency tricks or how to deal with this stuff or?
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess a few things. The mental resiliency thing is just understanding that you're not going to be loved by everyone. So just understand that, just find your tribe and rock with them. Try not to on purpose piss people off, I guess, but it's going to happen, especially if you're in a position like me, a comedian, and B, a comic that isn't too clean, likes to talk about things that toe the line. That's fun for me. It's like a Wordle, man. It's like how do I talk about abortion or whatever the trigger word is, and how do I make it funny? How do I make it clever enough to get away with that joke where people go, holy shit, like, dicey, but he pulled it off.
Yeah.
And that's
the trick. It's like taking the most taboo kind of offensive things and presenting them to your audience in a way that is just right on the edge kind of thing. And
then alleviates that tension. The rule with dark jokes is it has to be more funny than it is shocking.
Right.
And oftentimes the first time you tell the joke, it comes out more shocking than it is funny. Right. And hopefully, you know, you figure that balance out quick. And if not, you scrap the joke. And that t-shirt would arguably be more shocking than it is funny. So that's how you get in trouble. You got to keep also the racial stuff offline. Right now, the internet is not a good place for that. You can get away with it in a comedy club, but the internet is not a comedy club. So that would be some advice to, like, specifically comedians. The mental resiliency, yeah, just do shit that people love or hate. Anything in the middle is kind of mediocre. It'll stress your family out. Your mom wants you to be loved by everyone. Of course. I can tell you that. So that's a bit tough. And I hate, like you said, comics that are picking up steam or blowing up are the ones that are finding a way to move forward through the fire, but it's getting kind of boring. Like, there's a lot of these comics, and right. I don't like want to be known as the guy that's like Mr. Cancel Culture, but I just happen to be a magnet for it lately. And you have a few decisions when it happens, when it comes. Three decisions. And one is apologize. And I would argue that if I were to go on the news right now and apologize for Sam's joke, first of all, and Hack's joke, not even my, right? Yeah. I apologize for Tweedledee and Tweedledum. I'm sorry that these guys took a risk and you didn't like it. If I apologize for any joke, people aren't going to go, oh, actually, never mind. That guy's a good guy. We had him wrong. And, you know, it's my ticket to the show. That's not going to happen. They're your enemy now forever. It's tattooed on you. These are not the people that are going to come out to your show and support you anyways. So I think that's a moot point. Option two is to go silent. And that is something that was recommended to me through a professional when I got my first series of death threats, like 1,000 of them in 2020, pictures of guns, knives, addresses of the next comedy club I was going to be at, all because of a turban joke. I made a pun, East Indiana Jones. Okay. This guy saved a woman out of the river with his turban, unraveled the turban, threw it in. I compared this guy to East Indiana Jones. Anyways, 1,000 death
threats. And I remember that joke, for the first time I saw it, it was a hilarious joke, and it got a big pop at the club I was at. So,
yeah, the edit piece on the internet did not show the laughter, but whatever. That at that time I was told to apologize, and I said no. And then my manager wrote the apology. He said, just post this. I go, no. And then he called me. I was sitting in this living room, and he goes, hey, I got Mark Cuban's PR guy on the line. Hang tight.
Jesus.
Mark Cuban's PR guy. And I'm a huge Mavs fan. He's the owner of the Mavs, or was, I guess. And I was like, okay, I'll hear this out. If it's good enough for Luka Doncic and Dirk Nowitzki, it's good enough for me. Let's hear it out. He just said, 21 days of silence, Brett. Don't say anything. Don't tweet. Just go live your life. And this will all die down, and people will forget about it. And so that's not bad advice. Now, I couldn't really say anything anyways. All my Instagrams and stuff like that were deactivated. Like, they flagged them so many times, they got removed. But that's not bad advice.
Yeah.
You know, just go quiet. People are going to wonder, what the hell happened to you? Why aren't you speaking? You know, that's okay. And then the option three is to fight back a little bit. And by fight, I mean, in my case, that just means making jokes. Like, you've seen the promos that I'm running now. It's just I'm going with it and now doing the Ocean's 11 angle and trying to make conscious, like, good decisions for jokes, not just trying to stick my dick in the beehive and and rattle them. And that's something I talked to Hack about. He's a newer comic than me, and he will, like, throw something right away up on the story and share it and provoke and prod them a little bit. And I go, hey man, like, what's the joke behind this? He goes, well, it's this. And I go, is it worth it? And he's like, no, yeah, you're right. So
yeah, I guess the risk is that you kind of become one dimensional, right? You become the guy that is just fighting cancel culture rather than just the funny comedian that has, you know, has a wide range of things he can be funny about or something.
Yeah. I do, like, corporate events and shit like that. Like, I right now I'm doing this dirty tour with the Danger Cats, making fun of the Real Housewives of the Trucker Convoy. But sometimes I'm putting a blazer on, like, entertaining dentists. And I like all jobs. I like all of it. It's all a challenge to me. Like I said, it's like a Wordle, a mission. You got to figure it out. How am I going to get away with this? How am I going to roast Maxime Bernier to his face when he doesn't know what's coming? Like, these are insane little challenges I just do to entertain myself, really.
Right.
I'm an only child, if you couldn't figure that out. So
that's why you need all the attention, huh?
Not attention, just that it's the ability to, like, entertain myself.
Right.
This is what I do. This is.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's a dumb excuse, but.
No, that's it makes sense to me. So what's next for you?
Jail.
I mean, I see.
Jail.
What's that?
Jail.
Jail. you're not going to jail. You're on the rise. You're on the rise.
Bill C-63.
The Online Harms Act. Is that the one you're talking
about?
That's
half my act. That's half my act, pal. Maybe three quarters of my act is hate speech. Could be considered
Yeah. Right? Well, hopefully we can get that quashed. I had a constitutional lawyer on my show last week talking about this and raising a petition. John Carpe from the Justice Center for Constitutional something or other. And what's that?
Something or other.
Yeah. I hope that gets quashed. It sounds horrible. Yeah. But I mean,
can we talk about that for a second?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, know more than I do. Cause sure. I had to talk about this the other day on a interview with Joke World. They're asking me about this Bill C-63.
Yeah.
And all I know, so correct me if I'm wrong, cause this is kind of what I told them, is that yes, the headlines are saying potentially life in prison, which is like a total scare tactic, but more realistically is these heavy fines. And I understand that it's 20,000. First of all, it's not your private communications. It's online comments and public stuff only, but $20,000 goes to the person that filed the thing saying, beep, boop, beep, boop, he hurt my feelings. 20 grand to that person and 50 grand to the government. Is that right?
Right. So the fines can be up to $50,000 to the government and $20,000 to the victim. But, that's the maximum fine. There's a lot of troubling things about it. So, for example, it's not just, first of all, it gives teeth back to human rights tribunals. So the Human Rights Commission, Federal Human Rights Commission, is kind of this kangaroo court. It doesn't have the normal rules of court and justice and evidence and all those kinds of things. And so what it allows is for people, and they can be totally anonymous, and they don't even have to be the target of your thing. They can feel offended on behalf of someone else. They can file complaints against you to the Human Rights Tribunal. Now, this in and of itself is a trouble. Let's set aside the fines. There could be just an unending stream of woke activists who don't like Brett Forte lodging complaint after complaint against you. You have to. You don't have a choice but to go and defend yourself. Now you're incurring legal expenses that are probably a lot more than the fine they're going to slap you with anyways, and an unending stream of them. On top of that, the act would allow a judge to violate your liberty and put you in like an ankle bracelet and prohibit you from, give you a curfew and like prohibit you all sorts of things if they fear that you might promote hatred. So someone can go to court and say, based on the evidence, Your Honor, and this guy's pattern of behavior, we fear he might engage in a thought crime in the future. And the judge can order you slapped in an ankle bracelet. So it's like, it's not even pre-crime. It's pre-thought crime.
Minority Report.
It's like Minority Report stuff, but even to a greater extent, because Minority Report, there was an actual crime that was going to happen. In this case, it's just speech that might happen.
A comeback. Speech. A good sting. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other really troubling thing of this is that it creates a digital safety committee that will dramatically change the social media landscape. So, digital safety committee, right? So you know how social media companies now have to pay like news sites a commission if they post a news story. Like if on Facebook, I can't post news stories anymore because Facebook is refusing to pay news sites. So these,
Canadian
so now
news sites.
Canadian news sites. Yeah. So I can't see articles about Canada where, you know, my friend's posting about it anymore. So it's really changed that. This'll take this, this will be like 100 times worse because it'll be this digital safety committee determining what's acceptable on social media sites. And basically these social media companies will have to hire people to censor what's going on and make sure it's only right speak and that, that it's establishment approved thoughts that are being, being communicated out there on the social media landscape. So yeah, it's a huge draconian crazy thing. And it's rolled out as, you know, what is it called? Online Harms Act, right? So, I mean, who's against protecting the kids? Are you against protecting the kids, Brett? Are you against harassment and bullying? Well, then obviously you should support this. Or do you hate children?
What are you talking about? Right? You don't bully a kid and they come out shitty.
Right. Well, yeah.
Bully them too much, but there's like a nice amount. It's almost like an egg, like an 8 to 10 minute boil. That's perfect for the yolk.
The right thing is you expose people to hardship and then you teach them how to deal with it, right? I mean, that's what we do in the fire service, for example. We have a probationary year. You're a probie. For the first year, you're proving yourself to the guys around you, the guys that you're going to have to run into a burning building, the guys that are going to have their back. So we put some pressure on you, right? We're roasting you. We're putting you under pressure. We're like making you do tasks with everyone watching you and kind of jeering you a little bit and like putting you under pressure. And it's low risk pressure. Like you're going to get laughed at a little bit. That's pretty low risk compared to the stakes that when you're a full-fledged firefighter. And sometimes guys start to crumble under that pressure and don't know how to deal with it. And then as a senior guy, you take them aside and say, look, this is part of the process. Okay. Yeah. You need to rise to the occasion. This is how I dealt with it when I was a probie. And this is how you know, mental states and like got to roll with it. You teach that. And they're either going to rise to the occasion or they're going to wash out, you know, but most people rise to the occasion. They get it once you explain it to them. So there's some mentorship involved, but you don't stop the bullying. You don't stop applying the pressure. Of course, we're not allowed to do as much of that anymore. You know, it's really softened down because of the HR department and the whole energy or environment that's cultivating. But yeah, you're absolutely right. So this is, you're right. We should oppose this on principle, even if it is about
the digital safety community. Sounds like it's going to be the condo board for the internet. And
wow,
if there's no filing fee, like you can just sit there and file complaint after complaint after complaint. To me, that's like mining Bitcoin. There's not much Bitcoin left in this world to mine, but there's certainly a lot of hateful comments on Instagram. And apparently, if they're worth $20,000 each, that's half a Bitcoin right now. Oh, so people are going to have a full-time job trying to get rich, just stomping out the bullies on the internet to try to make kids not kill themselves. But isn't the government, don't they kind of want that when they introduced the MAID program? Do they not want it?
Yeah, well, they want the government doing it. They don't want you doing it. I mean, there's that guy in Ontario who was selling what was it, suicide hoods or something like that. He's getting charged with, I don't know, second degree murder for selling these suicide devices to people. Meanwhile, the Canadian government's like literally administering lethal injections to people that they paralyzed with a clot shot and don't want to build a wheelchair ramp for, you know. And that's compassionate humanitarianism, but yeah,
the government will come kick the stool for you.
Yeah, that's right. But if don't you dare kick it. I mean, you're a private citizen. You're not qualified to do
my,
that.
My friend Kian Simone, he's making a documentary. He's a really good documentary maker, and he's making one on this MAID program
Now.
And man, he just told me that this guy's daughter was like 17. And she made the decision without even telling her parents that she was going to do this and hid it from the dad. And somehow that was allowed. And he finds out at the last second and she orders like the service to come to her room. She lives at home. Dad's downstairs. Dad has no idea that these people are going to come over like Uber Eats, go upstairs and kill his daughter.
Yeah, like, good luck getting a physician to do a house call, but you get these lethal injectors.
He says to the documentary maker, Kian, he goes, I want you to come and hide in the closet for when they come over. Holy shit. Want you to get the moment where I stop these people from doing it, which would be insane footage. Thankfully, it never got to that point because he intervened beforehand. And I think Kian, something about raising money or something. They saved this girl's life. Like, she's alive right now because they got wind of it and thankfully intervened. But that would have been insane.
It's crazy. My mom, she died about 7 years ago now, but she was, I feel like she could have gotten better, with the proper medical care, but she was just declining and the healthcare system wasn't equipped to deal with what was going on with her. And the nurse said, you know what, have you guys considered MAID? Right. I'm like, the fuck, you're offering me, I know this is a high workload for you and stuff, but can we get some proper like medical treatment rather than just lethal injection? It's it's troubling that it's, you know, I'm a libertarian, right? So I think people should be allowed to, you know, legally kill themselves or even get help doing it. But when the government's doing it, when first of all, they have a monopoly on healthcare. And what that means is that it's illegal for me as a healthcare provider. I'm a paramedic. I can't provide healthcare to you unless I'm working for the government. I can't start a community care paramedic business where I go into seniors' homes and give them health checkups and coordinate with their primary care physician and do blood work and facilitate prescriptions and actually give them something that they really need right now. I can't do that. I'm prohibited by law from doing that. So that kind of service never gets started, and times that by, you know, hundreds of thousands of healthcare practitioners like me that could start an enterprise doing this if healthcare were legal, and you could actually help support people and lift them up and help heal them. But because that's prohibited and therefore healthcare is super scarce in this country, you know, now we have the state basically prohibiting healthcare and saying we're the only ones that can do. Yeah, it's just a nasty combination. But anyways,
way to fucking bum out the crowd.
I tell you, man,
we're having a good time, and then you fucking bummed everyone out.
I mean, when I go, I want to be smoked into a bacon flavor. You know what I mean?
I want to be crispy.
Nourished. I don't want to just get stuck in the ground. I want to be pectinized. But
so what's your deadlift now? More importantly, let's get to the good stuff. What's your deadlift?
Well, I'm in a calorie deficit, so I'm not gaining. I'm going to the beach in.
Broke? What does that mean?
Means that I'm trying to get shredded for Mexico in a couple weeks, going with my wife. So,
you go with your wife
to Mexico to the beach, and I want to look.
What
good,
do you need to be in magazine shape for if you're going with your wife?
It's the same as if you were a young man. You want to get laid. You know what I mean? And
I think it's in the bag. Tim, I think your wife will still climb on
you
top.
Think so?
Yeah.
Maybe. We'll see.
So yeah. You're in a calorie deficit. So you don't
I'm a calorie deficit. I did 455 times 3 this morning. That was my thing. This morning. Yeah. I did my workout this morning.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Hell good yeah. You got to stay hard, man. It's soft times and, you know, you don't have to be soft.
Soft times. You got to stay hard. Yeah.
You got to stay hard. Got to consciously stay hard. Got to work to stay hard, you know?
We haven't spoken in a while, man. So it's good to catch up. But libertarian-wise, are we running again? What's happening with Trudeau here? We want him out. Can you help with that? What's happening?
You know what? I've stepped back from politics. I'm a side commentator now. I stepped back from the party about 3 years ago. Okay. And, you know, I support them. They're my boys still. It's my philosophy. But, I got to pay the bills. Daddy's got to pay the bills, and there's no money in getting 0.24% of the vote, you know?
Yeah, calories are expensive these days.
They are. So I'm back firefighting, and I'm actually a union guy now. I just got elected as a vice president. So I'm going to be working to create kind of political change from that front, especially in the healthcare system, because it affects me and the membership that I serve directly. We would like to have local control over emergency medical services back. And so the union having a formal union position and working within the system might be a way of doing that. I'm going to try my best to help that out. And yeah, that's it. This podcast, you know, highlighting issues like the one you're bringing. So that's it for me. What about you? I'm kind of living vicariously through you. You're hanging out with, like I say, Brendan Schaub. You're going down to Austin to the mothership. I listen to the Kale Tony show on a regular basis. So, you know, that guys like me fantasize about the world that you're running in right now. Give us a little inside baseball. Like, what's it like?
Well, that's a fortress to crack, the mothership. It's similar to the right. Comedy Store. And what I mean is, like, man, even when I was 6 years into comedy, I was a headliner in Canada, and I go down to LA and you go up to the first door guy and you're like, hey man, I'm a comic from Canada. Can I just go in and watch the show? It's like, no, get out of here. There's 1,000 comics all trying to come in and watch the show for free. You're either on the lineup or you're not. So step one is, like, how do you get in the building? So you have to start coming in with confidence, like walking right past the guy. Hey, what's up? Ah, comedian. Yeah. Hey, ID or whatever. And if you just kind of walk like you own the place, you got to fake it till you make it. And you got to know exactly where to stand in the Comedy Store. There's certain spots. If you get in the way of a server or a comedian or anything, it's very tight in there. You're identified as, oh, that's an outsider. He doesn't know where to stand and he doesn't belong in here. So there was like a few trips just figuring out how to dodge the lasers in that place. And then you start rubbing shoulders with the right people. You start getting spots and stuff like that. And then the mothership is similar, just with more security, because it's right on 6th Street, which is like, there's mass shootings on that block, you know, once a year. And it's like Mardi Gras. It's like they shut down the whole street and it's just madness. So there's like heavy, like Joe Rogan looking guys with vests and shit up front. So that's actually kind of comforting. Because when I went there in 2021, I was playing a club down the street and there was a guy getting curb stomped outside of the club while a show was while Sam Walker was on stage. They were spraying blood off the sidewalk from the front steps of the club because some guy came in saying he wanted to kill Tony. Someone Jeez. Finally had the balls to kill Tony. This guy was going to do it, and they stomped him out. And, I think I had a taser. Like, it's madness. So the mothership is the club now, and all the other clubs have lost a bit of their attendance, and they now pick up, they eat off the scraps that the mothership leaves behind, because all those shows are sold out and people line up for a reserve spot. And if they can't get in, then they filter to the other clubs along the same block. So right. It's a nice little epicenter for comedy. You can just walk around the block, do a spot, go to the Sunset Strip, go to the Creek in the Cave, go over to the Vulcan, and kind of like a New York kind of setup. And I'm in now to the mothership somewhat because of what's going on. You know, the first couple right. of times I go there, they don't know who I am. Now all the door guys are like, yo, we've been watching what's going on. What up? Come on in. And that's half the battle right there. It's just like trying to float to the top of your competitive field. Forget what you do on stage. It's, you know, some of it's off stage as well. So that's kind of what I'm chipping away at. It's like a freezer that accumulates ice. You got to just chip away, and eventually
get my waffle. Get more hookers in there. Yeah. sorry YouTube, and sorry. Yeah. I don't condone that kind of comedy that came out of my mouth there. Wow, that's awesome. So, and do you keep in touch with Brendan Schaub at all?
He took a bit of time off of touring because he's got 3 kids now. Right. One of them had some health complications, so he wanted to be home for that. And he's really good at his like podcast and his YouTube stuff, and that keeps him home. Right. So he's kind of focusing on that. That's a guy that gets a lot of hate on the internet, not for... Is that right? Risky jokes, but yeah, people are mad that he got to start doing comedy at these big fortresses like I just described right away, because he was friends with all the people, and so the rest of the comedians were angry that he was on lineups with comics that are ahead of him. And yeah, it's a pretty tough challenge, but and they the thing is I've toured with the guy and he gets the job done. Like, the people come out. That's first thing. He gets an audience. They line up for him after. They take their photos. He gets the job done. We all can't be Dave Chappelle, you know?
Smoking
a cigarette on the stool, talking for 2 hours, banging a mic against our knee. You know, some of us just get it done in different ways. And he always got it done. And he's been so kind to me. Like, he pays you well. He treats you well. And
yeah,
I wish the best for him. Because, and the world hates him. And that's why I like him more. It's kind of like Russia.
Exactly.
Everyone's so against Russia that I cheer for Russian sports teams now. Tennis. I watch tennis and they don't even show the flag.
Right.
They'll show the Great Britain flag, the U.S. flag, the Canadian flag, and then a white square.
Where is he from? What? I don't get it. Yeah,
and it's been years, and it's so petty that you won't show the flag. Like, it's some sort of trigger.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. Go Russia.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. I've got a co-host, or a sometimes co-host, young Jared, I call him, who is interested in doing some comedy. Try it out. What advice do you have for people out there who might be interested in giving it a try? It's like, it seems like a super attractive thing right now. You know, it seems like a boom time for comedy, and a lot of people seem interested in it. Where do you start with this stuff? What's best practice for comedians in terms of creative process? Give us some inside baseball here. Is it work ethic? Is it doing shrooms? Is it?
No, that's a last resort. When you start running out of material, that's when you hit the shrooms.
Right.
I'm not there yet, thankfully. But no, you want to be sober on stage, first of all. Don't be drinking and going on stage. This is a job. Just because your work hours are late at night doesn't mean they're not work hours. A lot of guys, slippery slope like that, using and abusing drugs. I don't work with those guys. Danger Cats are all sober. We all drink soda waters before we go on stage. People are like, what? We thought you guys would be doing rails off strippers before going
right,
on.
Right.
Oh. So yeah, take it seriously. As for starting brand new. Okay. Well, when I did my first set ever, I drove 7 hours away. I did my first spot in Kelowna, because if I'm going to bomb, it's going to be in a city that doesn't know me.
Ah,
not going to follow me back.
Interesting.
So be smart about your first time. Don't invite your friends and family. Okay. You're not good your first time. You're lucky to survive your first time. This is not a time to be showing off. You show off in years down the road, maybe. I honestly like to compartmentalize my life. I don't want my girlfriend or my family at a show, because I want to be able to creatively maybe say something stupid that may or may not offend you, that's not really ready for presentation yet. It might have been a little fight we had that morning, and I bring it up on stage and it kind of is awkward and it doesn't do well and I move on. I don't need you it's just such a headache. So keep your family and friends away. Go do it in a different city. And as for material, think about what makes your friends laugh, or on dates. If you're on dates and there's always like a go-to story that you have that makes a girl laugh, that's probably like one of your better stories. So think about how you would translate that one on stage. And just think about the things you've said over and over that are go-to, that get laughs. You only have to make three to 5 minutes for your first set. And another thing is, expect for all your jokes to bomb and not do well. So beside the joke, think about your exit strategy. If bomb, how can I make fun of myself? How can I make fun of someone in the crowd? How can I get out of this situation? Because if you get no laughs, you can't go into the next joke as well. It's going to bomb as well. You have to kind of keep the combo going. Yeah.
That's awesome. I should be charging for this masterclass you're giving us right now.
Yeah.
I love that advice, because young Jared and I made a drunken pact at our staff Christmas party that we would pick a date, do an open mic together, live or die, and just, bucket list.
You've already done it. Like, you.
Well, I guess I've got. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I've got a bit. That I guess that's true. I like the idea of going away, though, because he's been kind of talking about it around the station, and all the guys are like, yeah, we got to come out and support you guys and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know about that. You've just confirmed what I feared. It's like, yeah, we're not going to be good. Let's wait until.
Well, you, I have a little bit higher hopes for you because I know you were out of the gate capable. You had like 5 minutes on stage too. You had like a full dossier on me. So
yeah, I didn't.
And you're got a microphone in front of your face right now. You're a competent speaker, so you're ahead of the game already. Yeah. So you could invite people out.
Fair enough. Yeah. And I mean, like, I look back at that set and I kind of cringe too, because I'm like, fuck, I did a lot of talking to get to the laugh. I could see a lot of ways I could cut down and be a lot more. Yeah. It's like Mark Twain said, you know, it's the same with writing. It's like, what did he say? He said, I don't have time to write you a short note, so I'm going to write you a long one. And it's all about like, the work is getting it down to it's like the fewest words possible to get to your point or get to your laugh or whatever. Yep. I think that's what it seems to me. So if I do it, I'd have to do some work on that. But yeah. And the same thing about, like, I remember my wife came to one of my first political speeches and I was just like all over the map and just terrible. And then it's like, yeah, no, you don't have to come to these anymore. I don't need you there. And then like, she saw me a few years later, give a keynote in front of like 1,000 people at a conference and I knocked it out of the park and she's like, holy shit, I didn't know you were that good a speaker. So there, you can see how getting those reps in and like having the safety to do it without the pressure of friends and family judging you. I could see how that would be beneficial. And then what's your process? Do you write everything out or do you just kind of go point form or
Yeah, I think it's the first. I'll usually just like say something funny with my friends or whatever, and then I'll write it down in my phone, and then I'll see you later if that can translate to on stage, or was that just an in the moment quip? And 10% of the time it translates to on stage, and then and then now it's like a piece that, where does that fit? Does that fit into another joke that you have? Does it add? Right. Is it a new idea? I just have all these little puzzle pieces. And eventually they kind of naturally group together and you got yourself a bit. And then as for on stage, I don't have a list of, it's just like bullet points, you know?
Right.
And you don't try to bring a note thing on stage or anything, but if you have to, just have a couple words.
Right. Yeah. Just to keep you on track where you're going. Yeah. And you said like there's a bunch of pieces, you're trying to fit them together. What do you just use, like a notes app or on your phone or something like that?
Yeah.
Or do you just kind of keep track of it up here?
Yeah, I got a bunch of, I got one called try this.
Right.
And just like a bunch of stupid ideas. And then I'll like thumb through it before going on stage just to like have the ammunition ready just in case if it comes up with some crowd work or something, I might be able to slide it in. And other than that, I have the other app is like, or the other notes thing is just like a set list, kind of like an idea of maybe what my game plan is, what I want to talk about. And not very often do you follow it, for me anyways. I'll start off by hitting the first few bullet points and then something happens in the crowd and then you just take it a new direction and then try to find a way to wrap it up. I very rarely do, like, if I have to do an early show and a late show, I'm not doing the same set back to back because I'm bored of it. I know the audience didn't see it the first time, but I'm bored. Yeah.
Gotcha. That's cool. And when you do crowd work, have you kind of mentally rehearsed different ways to take it, or is it just totally off the cuff?
It's a bit of both. You have like almost planned crowd work that you know is going to hit. And that's like the same way with a joke, is like you want to end on something you know is going to be good, and your new stuff is in the middle, so that at least you can recover with something you know is good. So with crowd work, it's like I peek my head through the curtain and I cheat a little bit. I'll look at the crowd and I'll go, okay, that girl, that guy, I can say this about this guy, perfect. And then so that gives me my first line or my last line. And then in between I can play and just see what they give me. And if it's going well, you take some time on it. If not, you back out, you move on. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's awful, but you got to know when to pull the plug.
Cool. And if young Jared and I were to want to do an open mic, how do you even book one of those? Do you call them ahead, or is it just like you show up and on an open mic night? Or
I would say like Thursday is your best shot. Yuck Yuck's in town. They have a amateur night, and Dale Ward runs and books that show. You could easily.
That's in Edmonton or Calgary or
Calgary. Sorry,
Calgary.
Yeah. Where are you?
We're in Edmonton or near Edmonton, Sherwood Park.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. Well, then Edmonton, I believe at the Comic Strip, they do Tuesdays or Wednesdays is a similar thing. And the Comic Strip is right. One of the best clubs in the country. So right. That would be good for you. I don't really know the open mic circuit in that city too well, though.
Yeah. Well, we might go to Kelowna.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Honestly.
We'll go ski in and hit the open mic there and bomb in front of strangers. And then
there you go.
Come back with a ski trip and a learning experience under our belt.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Brett, I've taken up an hour of your time. I really appreciate you coming on. Anything you want to plug? What are your plans going forward here? Is there a Danger Cats tour still going on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just temporarily secret venues just for a month or two here while this dies off. It already is, you know.
Right.
We've seen it. But I guess coming up next is Vancouver. That's going to be the epicenter of the Pick the Joke. So if there's going to be problems, it's going to be there. We'll see what happens. That's March 24th. And if you're a speculative ticket buyer who wants to support us and is worried, oh, am I going to show up to something that's going to be like a firebomb? Don't worry. Like, the police in each city know where I'm going to be. There is protection in place just in case. And there is no problem. Like, we went and did that show in Winnipeg. There was no issues. We just did shows in Calgary. There's no issues. It's all just noise on the internet. So
yeah,
this is fun. This is only going to happen once with these secret venues, and they're going to be underground. And again, March 24th, Vancouver. Then it's March 30 and 31 in Ottawa. April 5th with Brian Holtzman in Toronto. We got Drayton Valley and Hinton after that. And then we're doing a huge theater in Lloydminster, May 11th. I think that's like 600 seater. That's going to be our biggest swing yet. So use some help for Lloydminster.
Lloydminster. That's awesome. Well, do you know Sean Newman at all?
No.
Sean Newman is he's a pretty big podcaster, and he's located in Lloydminster. And I'll put you in touch with him after this podcast. He'll help you fill that theater. There's lots of people. I mean, he actually regularly fills theaters for Little Freedom events that he puts on, and I'm sure those same people would be pack that theater for you. So we'll get it out there. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'll put those links down below, guys. So you can help support the Danger Cats. I have a feeling most of my audience aren't going to be too worried about protesters or firebombers. In fact, that might excite them a little bit more to show up and make sure that, that our cats are protected there. And once again, Brett, best of luck to you. I wish nothing but the best for you on your comedy career. I love watching you skyrocket and seeing how far you've come. And hopefully we'll be talking to you again soon after you land a headlining gig at the Mothership or doing stadiums or something.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, man. Thank you so much. Now go eat some calories. All right.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Later.